This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, State Representative Jonathan Stickland joins us to talk about the future of the conservative movement in Texas and nationwide. Also, lawsuits are being dropped by the left against sanctuary cities for the unborn. We discuss that with John Segal, Texas Right to Life. Plus, a leftist paradox. Liberals are fighting to demolish the government institutions they've helped create. Michael Quinn Sullivan talks about that in this week's commentary. Welcome back to Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard. I'm going to talk to a couple guests today about some big conservative issues, but first, we're joined by State Representative Jonathan Stickland to talk about the current state of the grassroots movement. Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Brandon. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is a big, big time, I think, right now. I mean, not only with the coronavirus and these economic shutdowns, but we've also got, you know, a Republican Party of Texas holding their convention soon, and we've got a big November election. And I think a question on a lot of folks' minds right now is, you know, what is going on in the political world right now? It seems so different than it did even a few months ago.
It is. And I think that we're at a point, Brandon, where things are changing faster than they ever have before. But, you know, overall, I will tell you, there seems to be a lot of people who are engaged and being politically minded right now, a lot of whom I think have not been in the past. What I've noticed, whether it's on my social media account or conversations I've had, things like that, is that people are very concerned. And you've really got a number of different things that by themselves would be pushing the political talk and, you know, inspiring people to do things, all happening at once. You've got the COVID-19 situation, right, and the response or lack of response. You have got this situation with Black Lives Matter and the police, mm-hmm, and the riots. And then even over the last couple of days, I've seen a huge rise in people interested in the conversation of statues and history and names of sports organizations. So you've got a lot of drivers right now going on. And what I think is we're seeing a lot of new people who are engaging politically and seem to have plans to remain involved. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think the last time that we've seen a wave like this, of course, you had the 2010 Tea Party wave that brought a lot of new folks in. I think, yes, you know, a lot of people would argue a similar thing happened in 2016 with people who voted for Donald Trump for president, a lot of people who weren't, yes, involved in politics. But this really is, I think, you're seeing a lot of new people that are suddenly coming off the sidelines and saying, well, hey, wait a second. you know, what these folks, yeah, are doing, you know, not just in D.C., but also in Austin and in our local governments matters. And so, you know, you see a lot of talk from the left and the media, you know, about how, oh, the conservative movement is dying. But is that what you're seeing?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm seeing the complete opposite. It does feel a lot like that first Tea Party wave and what was driving people and opinions and thoughts and feelings at the time. I don't think that it's crescendoed yet, but, you know, this is what happens when people are going about their lives, they're doing things, they're watching TV, they're doing sports, all this stuff. That's all been halted. And so everything that is going around around them, these policies that are coming from local, state, and county officials, it's affecting their daily lives, and it's forcing them to respond and have opinions. And, you know, right now I'm looking around and I'm hearing from folks, and I think a good example is Shelley Luther out, mm-hmm, of Dallas, the salon owner. A lot of business owners who have been affected by what's going on that weren't necessarily involved politically. You know, you look at Shelley Luther, for instance, she's never voted in a Republican primary, as far as I've been told. She's never been around, and now she's kind of leading this grassroots movement, running around the state. She's a hot commodity, giving speeches everywhere. And there's a lot of Shelley Luthers running around. It's going to be interesting to see what comes of it. But I think it's going to have a big impact.
Yes, you know, the Shelley Luther case, I think, is the perfect example. I mean, here's somebody who is a salon owner, is just trying to keep her business alive, try to keep her employees working, gets jailed, and then, you know, over the next several weeks, I mean, it has been somebody who you've seen at these Open Texas rallies and has become a bit of a political fixture. You know, so yep. What are these new folks? I mean, what are these new folks that we're bringing into the fold look like?
Well, I think a lot of them are business owners. A lot of them are small business owners. A lot of them are even higher ups in their company who are affected by everything financially going on. And then what I'm seeing, too, is we're seeing a big resurgence in activity from kind of the suburban mom types. And that has a lot to do with the Black Lives Matter movement and this talk of defunding police and, you know, a lot of younger parents who I think, you know, reportedly have been frustrated with politics in general and maybe even starting to sway to the left as the Democrats and the socialists have started to kind of show their hand. It's forced a lot of these people to say, you know what, there's some major differences here in the way I see the world and what these people who I've been, you know, starting to cozy up to, and I don't want anything to do with them. You know, they start to think about rallies at their local parks, which we've seen everywhere, and the fact that I can't take my kids anywhere, and I've got to start considering things like safety and what's happening around me in ways that I never have before. A lot of these people seem to have a lot more opinions and starting to speak out.
How do you suspect current elected officials are going to respond to this? You're an elected official, or just about to be out and recovered. You know, how are those folks going to respond to this? Because again, this is a very, very new base of people that are being interjected into these elections.
Well, as politicians are going to be forced to take positions and offer solutions and do the things that politicians are supposed to do, it's really exposing a lot of them, because I think traditionally, you know, when I was taught by some of the establishment folks and seen behind the scenes, there's this general feeling of if we don't have to take a position, that's what we prefer. Because if we don't take a position, then, you know, we're not going to make anyone upset. But because there is so much worry and anger and, you know, all this stuff floating out there, some of the traditional, I'm just going to spin it politically stuff is not working. So you're seeing a lot of these politicians feeling, and rightfully so, that they've got to take a position. And it's been very interesting to see people start to separate themselves. When you have issues like, should we have a police department or should we not, being talked about, there's not a lot of middle ground, which is where they usually run to. So you're seeing a lot of politicians having a hard time with this right now. And frankly, you see a lot of them upsetting their base. You've got criticism of someone like Greg Abbott, who I have not, you know, traditionally over the years, Greg Abbott, no one's really had any criticism about him. He's just kind of been there. And now I see people saying he's doing a horrible job. That was something I never saw before. So definitely interesting. It's hard to say how each one of them is going to respond. I have been encouraged by some of your more conservative members, like the Texas Freedom Caucus, seems to be a lot more vocal. Maybe they got some of their mojo back with everything going on, but you're starting to see them take positions and make comments and write letters and things like that.
And that's just something, I mean, I keep coming back to this. I mean, that's just something that would have been unheard of a year ago or even a few months ago to see any Republican member, you know, of the Texas legislature speaking out or calling on Governor Abbott to change his actions. A couple quick questions before we have to let you go here. Looking forward to November, what are your predictions for November elections? I think there's so much up in the air right now. It's really hard to say.
It's very hard to say. I think it's a fluid situation. And the thing, I had a conversation with my wife yesterday, and, you know, there's some polls out there that Donald Trump is slipping in some areas and in Texas. But this is all stuff that, if we stop and think about it, that we heard last time. I remember 2016, on election night, and everyone was convinced Hillary Clinton was the next president by 10 or 15 points. And it just wasn't true. I think there is something to the silent majority that Trump talks about. I see no reason that that is not going to be the case again, but it's not coming up in measurements. And I'm absolutely convinced that the left-wing media and the mainstream media is going to be pushing that narrative once again. They don't know what else to do. So is it true this time? I don't know. But they certainly do not have a good track record of predicting what is going to happen on the national scale. I do think that a lot of the races that we see out there right now, Brandon, down ballot, are going to be affected greatly by Donald Trump. So Republicans across this nation really need him to solidify his base, continue to reach out to new people, and activate this, you know, so-called silent majority.
Yes, and in Texas, real quick, we've got about 20 or 30 seconds here. What are your predictions for the next legislative session? Obviously going to be a big budget shortfall, I think a lot of folks are expecting. How's that affect
them? Yes, I think next session is going to be crazy. I think you've got a huge budget shortfall, but you've also got redistricting, which is always hard to navigate through. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, I think our big three, whoever the speaker ends up being, Abbott and Dan Patrick, have a big job on their hands. And right now I'm very concerned that they're not showing the ability to actually lead. And that's what we need. So scary time going into the next legislative session in Texas.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brandon.
Next up, we're seeing all across Texas lawsuits being dropped against sanctuary cities for the unborn. To talk a little bit about this, we've got John Siegel, the legislative director for Texas Right to Life. John, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So first off, you know, let's get some context here. We've seen a lot of these sanctuary cities for the unborn start to pop up over the last year or so. Tell me a little bit about that movement to designate these sanctuary cities across Texas. When and how did that start?
Yeah, so this is a really fascinating thing that's developed just over a year ago, following the 2019 legislative session. A lot of pro-life activists around the state were very disappointed with the session outcome. Not a single bill passed that actually banned abortion. And so you had a lot of pro-lifers around Texas who wanted to make a difference. And so we started seeing these local governments, city councils and mayors work on what they can do to stop abortion in their specific their specific town or county. Right. And so we kind of jumped in and started helping them do this. And we saw, wide success of a bunch of cities in East Texas began, and then it spread into far West Texas. And now we're seeing them pop up all over the place of these cities that are passing ordinances. These are not feel-good resolutions. These are actual ordinances that ban abortion within their city lines. And so we're actually seeing these what they're called sanctuary cities for the unborn pop up, and it keeps Planned Parenthood from coming in to set up an abortion clinic, and it also keeps out any kind of abortion procedures in their city. And so it's a really interesting legal attack and effort to protect innocent human life when the state legislature failed the movement.
And I think that's been really, really interesting to see. Is normally when we talk about pro-life policy and life-saving policy, I mean, we're looking to, folks are looking to Washington, D.C., or they're looking to Austin. And, this was one of those first cases where, counties and cities have started to get onto this. So about now, I mean, how many cities or counties are doing this or trying to do this?
Yeah, so we saw a wave of seven cities pass this, and we saw, so it was kind of steady growth. And then after we hit the kind of 10 city mark, there was a lawsuit filed against it. So we started catching a lot of momentum, getting up to a dozen cities, and the ACLU filed a lawsuit with some other organizations, pro-abortion organizations in the state, filed a lawsuit right around that point to kind of stop the momentum, because we saw, like I said, it was East Texas, and then we started seeing some cities like Big Spring and West Texas start adopting this. And so there was this lawsuit to stop it. Now, the lawsuit ended up being fruitless. It was really just an intimidation factor. And when you're talking about a small city, you know, city council considering whether to take a bold move to ban abortions in their backyard, just the threat of a lawsuit by, you know, an organization like ACLU that can just pour tons of money into it, whether it's a good suit or not, that's intimidating. And that was their attempt. And so we worked on it with some pro-life lawyers and ended up getting that case dismissed. And now we see kind of the next step in their attack. But once we got around that 10, 11 city mark, that's when they started attacking legally. And, you know, before that, they would send threatening letters to these city councils. And thankfully, a lot of city councils still went forward and passed the ordinance. And then we had this lawsuit that finally got dismissed. And now we're seeing the next step of their attack starting in February, which is just they're not giving up. They're still trying to intimidate the pro-life movement from banning abortions in these cities.
Yes, and that's the next thing I want to talk about. So just a recap, you had ACLU filing these lawsuits. Those suits have been dropped, but they're still attacking, trying to attack these cities or counties that are attempting to implement these sanctuary city for the unborn policies, resorting to personal attacks and intimidation, really, to try to get their way.
Yeah, so that was the interesting thing that we really didn't expect. Brandon, is this last, so they lost in court. We thought, okay, maybe they'll go and pick on some other cities that change the wording a little bit of the ordinance and see if they can, you know, conjure up some kind of complaint. But what they actually did is they filed a defamation lawsuit against one of the pro-life activists that is spearheading this effort. His name is Mark Dixon. You guys have interviewed him before.
Yes.
And he's kind of, you know, he's out there working with these cities and building contacts and building momentum. And we've been partnering with Mark. And what these pro-abortion groups did is they filed three lawsuits against him personally, saying that he's going around defaming them. He's going around calling them criminals, calling them murderers, and that hurt their feelings. And so they've run to court to file this defamation lawsuit against him for making these claims that they say are you know, lying and manipulative and hurting their, you know, precious reputation around the state of Texas.
Yes. And you know, for you know, an average person, right? I mean, if you're somebody who's an activist, I mean, we've seen this tactic tried before in many different forms and ways, which is essentially, you know, most people would see being attacked in a lawsuit like this or going after personally. They see that it could be very expensive. They think it's intimidating. And a lot of people, you know, they might want to back down. And so certainly great that y'all are helping him through this. And, you know, unfortunately, I think it's something that we just, you know, you have to look at and expect to see more of. But, you know, what do you see is the impact of, you know, like we talked about, the ACLU has dropped these initial suits against these cities and counties. But what do you predict will happen in the future with these efforts?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really all they have is just intimidation. And when you're dealing with a small, you know, local government that has a smaller budget and they're constantly watching that budget, just the threat, whether it's frivolous or not, just the threat of a lawsuit, whether it's the defamation, you know, side of it, or just, you know, making a complaint against the ordinance itself, is a real threat. Even if we kind of assure them, hey, we can win in the end, it still costs money to get the attorney to, you know, do the filings and everything. So so we're worried about the impact that that will have. But the really encouraging thing, Brandon, is that we have seen leaders at the local government still ready to fight, still ready to pass these ordinances in their backyard. And so we have, 15 to 20 cities right now across the state that are still in some kind of process or, you know, steps of the process. They want to still bring these to a vote. And the only thing this last lawsuit is changing is that they're going to be careful and not hurt the feelings of these pro-abortion groups. So we won't call you a murderer. We'll just say that your business revolves around promoting murder. I mean, I don't know. We'll be more careful with how we talk about you, but we know this is not anything new. That you know, they're constantly trying to change the language and constantly trying to manipulate what the truth of it is. But the truth is, you have an industry in Texas that their whole business model revolves around murder. It revolves around taking the life of innocent humans. Yeah. And now the interesting thing in the last 10 years is that you have these auxiliary groups. So they're not the ones doing the abortion, but they are like a, you know, a nonprofit that will pay for the travel costs to get to an abortion. Mm-hmm. Or they're a nonprofit that will pay for your attorney if you need to go to a court to get permission to do an abortion if you're a minor. So you have all these little outside groups, and they're the ones that are in this fight as well, is because some of these ordinances have called them criminal organizations. And so we're taking on the whole industry, and these cities are standing strong to protect innocent human life.
Excellent. If folks want their cities or counties to be sanctuary city, they can absolutely be working with Texas Right to Life to make that happen. Thank you, John, for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
As liberals push to defund the police, should conservatives be quick to defend government institutions? Michael Quinn Sullivan discusses Democrats' dilemma in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary.
The Democrats have a dilemma. They demand we hate the same institutions they want to grow. We shouldn't take the bait. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. In light of protests sparked by incidents of police brutality, a friend recently bemoaned the state of our nation. He pointed to citizens coming to grips with the realization that institutions in which we have traditionally placed our trust have been revealed as untrustworthy. He seemed genuinely surprised. In the span of 3 months, Americans have witnessed fear-mongering over a pandemic, drive, economic turmoil, and now cities have been set on fire. For all who see it, the great leftist lie, the Democrats' dilemma, has been exposed. On the one hand, leftists have spent decades demanding we place unconditional trust in big and growing government for our safety and well-being. We are to give government institutions charge of our lives from cradle to grave. With each new expansion of government comes the need for more zealous enforcement of laws at the hands of an ever-growing legion of officers and agents. Yet these same progressive Democrats demand we join them in deriding the very institutions of intrusive government they've built up. After mocking our concerns about big government abusing liberty, they expect us to accept responsibility for their massive government institutions running afoul of citizens' inalienable rights to the pursuit of happiness. As citizens struggle under the weight of government, we are told the solution is to make government even heavier. We should not be surprised when government agents are oppressive. It is a problem as old as the history of government itself. When the people of Israel sought to cast off the liberty given to them and then embrace the shackles of worldly government, God told them what would happen. He warned Israel, as recorded in 1 Samuel 8, of the ways the king who shall reign over them, and they weren't pleasant. God wanted his people to govern themselves under his laws. In their sin, they wanted a big government to replace him as king to go out and fight their battles. There has never in history been a small government tyrant. Every dictatorship in history has been built on expansive government under the guise of protecting the citizenry from some terrible foe, real or created. Tyrants use the machinery of massive agencies to brutalize the people deemed unclean, unworthy, or unnecessary, and later, to oppress those who dare question their power. The 21st century has provided a gruesome spectacle of left-wing progressives using the excesses of government as an excuse to grow government further. We're not witnessing race riots. We're witnessing leftist agitators, white, privileged, powerful, using incidents of racism to justify sowing chaos in an effort to unravel our republic. The irrationality of their public position should be obvious. How can those who complain about government abuse recommend an even more expansive and oppressive government? These are not serious solutions, yet are treated seriously by those who want power. Sadly, the left's agitation works because so many on the right default to being reactionaries. Too many on the right, in an almost Pavlovian response, side with oppressive institutions simply because they're familiar and under assault from the left. We should resist the urge to defend bloated institutions of government. Nor can we rush to side with the leftists just because we partially agree with some of their current criticisms. Joining the mob will only aid the agitators seeking to sacrifice individual liberty on the altar of the state. It's a failure of epic proportions for people on the right to defend the indefensible actions of government actors. It's even worse to endorse as solutions to the excesses of government policy that grow government even more. We who claim to be skeptics of government power, precisely because it's prone to overreach and abuse, should not become reflexive proponents of those institutions in the kabuki theater of the left's latest power play. Practically speaking, the modern left both over-exaggerates the problems they rally against, at least relative to many other problems we face, and they recommend dangerous non-solutions that will only aggravate the situation in the future. While today's protesters and demonstrators want to defund the police, their left-wing organizers want to centralize and grow that power for themselves. The more power given to government and its agents, the more often abuses will arise against those least able to defend themselves. We must instead be true to the principles of liberty and self-governance. Our faith and trust must not be in government institutions or its functionaries. A self-governing people should eye with heavy suspicion every agent and officer of government, because none of us can be trusted to wield fearsome power over anyone else. The British statesman and Christian philosopher John Dalberg Acton understood the grave danger posed by the corrupting nature of power. Quote, "The danger is not that a particular class is unfit to govern," he said. Quote, "Every class is unfit to govern," end quote. Living a generation earlier, America's John Adams wrote, quoting, "There is a danger from all men. The only maxim of a free government ought to be to trust no man living with power to endanger the public liberty," end quote. We have too many crimes and therefore too many opportunities to be detained by the police because we've allowed government to get too big. We see so much injustice go unpunished because we've given too much immunity to individuals acting in the name of an omnipresent state. At the same time, we force those who are accused by the state to bargain for their liberty, denying nearly all of them a fair day in court. Too many people live in the shadows and ditches of life because too many barriers have been erected to entrepreneurship, to the trades, and even to property ownership. Government is not the solution. It has become the chief enabler and enforcer of the problems we face. If we're to live peacefully with each other, if we are to stamp out the injustices of racism and envy, if we're to rein in abusive actions by government officials, it all begins by reclaiming our founding sense of self-governance. The solutions to our most vexing problems come not from relying on government, but in putting our faith in God and His guidance. We must stop outsourcing our responsibilities to the Leviathan of state. We must instead take personal responsibility for our own safety and welfare, and that of our neighbors. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
And that'll do it for this episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email with occasional updates throughout the week. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.